the noise and hurry and pleasures and business of the world, lead us on with eyes that see not and ears that hear not. Yet at death it will set itself before us in a dreadful magnitude. It will haunt us like a dismal ghost, and our conscience will never let us take our eyes from it. We see in worldly matters what a torment self-condemnation is, and how hardly a man is able to forgive himself when he has brought himself into any calamity or disgrace purely by his own folly. The affliction is made doubly tormenting because he is forced to charge it all upon himself as his own act and deed against the nature and reason of things and contrary to the advice of all his friends. Now by this we may in some degree guess how terrible the pain of that self-condemnation will be when a man shall find himself in the miseries of death under the severity of a self-condemning conscience, charging all his distress upon his own folly and madness, against the sense and reason of his own mind, against all the doctrines and precepts of religion, and contrary to all the instructions, calls, and warnings, both of God and man. Penitence. P-E-N-I-T-E-N-S. Note. Penitence. Penitent, almost in the sense of remorseful. Penitence was a busy, notable tradesman and very prosperous in his dealings, but died in the 35th year of his age. A little before his death, when the doctors had given him over, some of his neighbors came one evening to see him, at which time he spake thus to them, "I see, my friends, the tender concern you have for me by the grief that appears in your countenances, and I know the thoughts that you have now about me. You think how melancholy a case it is to see so young a man and in such flourishing business delivered up to death. And perhaps had I visited any of you in my condition, I should have had the same thoughts of you. But now, my friends, my thoughts are no more like your thoughts than my condition is like yours. It is no trouble to me now to think that I am to die young, or before I have raised an estate. These things are now sunk into such mere nothings that I have no name little enough to call them by. For if in a few days or hours I am to leave this carcass to be buried in the earth, and to find myself either forever happy in the favor of God, or eternally separated from all light and peace, can any word sufficiently express the littleness of everything else? Is there any dream like the dream of life which amuses us with the neglect and disregard of these things?" Amuses, note 7, occupies the attention of Watts in 1789, "We are so amused and engrossed with the things of sense that we forget our Maker." Is there any folly like the folly of our manly state, which is too wise and busy to be at leisure for these reflections? When we consider death as a misery, we only think of it as a miserable separation from the enjoyments of this life. We seldom mourn over an old man that dies rich, but we lament the young that are taken away in the progress of their fortune. You yourselves look upon me with pity, not that I am going unprepared to meet the judge of quick and dead, but that I am to leave a prosperous trade in the flower of my life. This is the wisdom of our manly thoughts, and yet what folly of the silliest children is so great as this? For what is there miserable or dreadful in death but the consequences of it? When a man is dead, what does anything signify to him but the state he is then in? Our poor friend Lepidus died, you know, as he was dressing himself for a feast. Do you think it is now part of his trouble that he did not live till that entertainment was over? Note 8. Lepidus means elegant. Feasts and business and pleasures and enjoyments seem great things to us, whilst we think of nothing else. But as soon as we add death to them, they all sink into an equal littleness, and the soul that is separated from the body no more laments the loss of business than the losing of a feast. If I am now going into the joys of God, could there be any reason to grieve that this happened to me before I was 40 years of age? Could it be a sad thing to go to heaven before I had made a few more bargains or stood a little longer behind a counter? And if I am to go amongst lost spirits, could there be any reason to be content that this did not happen to me till I was old and full of riches? If good angels were ready to receive my soul, could it be any grief to me that I was dying upon a poor bed in a garret? And if God has delivered me up to evil spirits, to be dragged by them to places of torments, could it be any comfort to me that they found me upon a bed of state? When you are as near death as I am, you will know that all the different states of life, whether of youth or age, riches or poverty, greatness or meanness, signify no more to you than whether you die in a poor or stately apartment. The greatness of those things which follow death makes all that goes before it sink into nothing. Now that judgment is the next thing that I look for, and everlasting happiness or misery is come so near me, all the enjoyments and prosperities of life seem as vain and insignificant, and to have no more to do with my happiness than the clothes that I wore before I could speak. But, my friends, how am I surprised that I have not always had these thoughts? For what is there in the terrors of death, in the vanities of life, or the necessities of piety, but what I might have as easily and fully seen in any part of my life? What a strange thing is it that a little health or the poor business of a shop should keep us so senseless of these great things that are coming so fast upon us? Just as you came in my chamber, I was thinking with myself, what numbers of souls there are now in the world, in my condition at this very time, surprised with the summons to the other world, some taken from their shops and farms, others from their sports and pleasures, these at suits of law, those at gaming tables, some on the road, others at their own firesides, and all seized in an hour when they thought nothing of it, frightened at the approach of death, confounded at the vanity of all their labors, designs, and projects, astonished at the folly of their past lives, and not knowing which way to turn their thoughts to find any comfort, their consciences flying in their faces, bringing all their sins to their remembrance, tormenting them with deepest convictions of their own folly, presenting them with the sight of the angry judge, the worm that never dies, the fire that is never quenched, the gates of hell, the powers of darkness, and the bitter pains of eternal death. Oh, my friends, I bless God that you are not of this number, that you have time and strength to employ yourselves in such works of piety as may bring you peace at the last. And take this along with you, that there is nothing but a life of great piety or a death of great stupidity that can keep off these apprehensions. Had I now 1,000 worlds, I would give them all for 1 year more, that I might present unto God 1 year of such devotion and good works as I never before so much as intended. You, perhaps, when you consider that I have lived free from scandal and debauchery, and in the communion of the church, wonder to see me so full of remorse and self-condemnation at the approach of death. But alas, what a poor thing it is to have lived only free from murder, theft, and adultery, which is all that I can say of myself. You know indeed that I have never been reckoned a sot, but you are at the same time witnesses and have been frequent companions of my intemperance, sensuality, and great indulgence. And if I am now going to a judgment where nothing will be rewarded but good works, I may well be concerned that though I am no sot, yet I have no Christian sobriety to plead for me. It is true I have lived in the communion of the church and generally frequented its worship and services on Sunday when I was neither too idle nor otherwise disposed of by my business and pleasures. But then my conformity to the public worship has been rather a thing of course, than any real intention of doing that which the service of the church supposes. Had it not been so, I had been oftener at church, more devout when there, and more fearful of ever neglecting it. But the thing that now surprises me above all wonders is this, that I never had so much as a general intention of living up to the piety of the gospel. This never so much as entered into my head or my heart. I never once in my life considered whether I was living as the laws of religion direct, or whether my way of life was such as would procure me the mercy of God at this hour. And can it be thought that I have kept the gospel terms of salvation without ever so much as intending in any serious and deliberate manner either to know them or keep them? Can it be thought that I have pleased God with such a life as he requires, though I have lived without ever considering what he requires or how much I have performed? How easy a thing would salvation be if it could fall into my careless hands, who have never had so much serious thought about it as about any one common bargain that I have made. In the business of life, I have used prudence and reflection. I have done everything by rules and methods. I have been glad to converse with men of experience and judgment, to find out the reasons why some fail and others succeed in any business. I have taken no step in trade but with great care and caution, considering every advantage or danger that attended it. I have always had my eye upon the main end of business, and have studied all the ways and means of being a gainer by all that I undertook. But what is the reason that I have brought none of these tempers to religion? What is the reason that I, who have so often talked of the necessity of rules and methods and diligence in worldly business, have all this while never once thought of any rules or methods or managements to carry me on in a life of piety? Do you think anything can astonish and confound a dying man like this? What pain do you think a man must feel when his conscience lays all this folly to his charge, when it shall show him how regular, exact, and wise he has been in small matters that are passed away like a dream, and how stupid and senseless he has lived, without any reflection, without any rules, in things of such eternal moment as no heart can sufficiently conceive them? Had I only my frailties and imperfections to lament at this time, I should lie here humbly trusting in the mercies of God. But alas, how can I call a general disregard and a thorough neglect of all religious improvement a frailty or imperfection, when it was as much in my power to have been exact and careful and diligent in a course of piety as in the business of my trade? I could have called in as many helps, have practiced as many rules, and been taught as many certain methods of holy living as of thriving in my shop, had I but so intended and desired it. Oh, my friends, a careless life, unconcerned and unattentive to the duties of religion, is so without all excuse, so unworthy of the mercy of God, such a shame to the sense and reason of our minds, that I can hardly conceive a greater punishment than for a man to be thrown into the state that I am in, to reflect upon it. Penitence was here going on, but had his mouth stopped by a convulsion, which never suffered him to speak any more. He lay convulsed about 12 hours and then gave up the ghost. Now, if every reader would imagine this penitence to have been some particular acquaintance or relation of his, and fancy that he saw and heard all that is here described, that he stood by his bedside when his poor friend lay in such distress and agony, lamenting the folly of his past life, it would, in all probability, teach him such wisdom as never entered into his heart before. If to this he should consider how often he himself might have been surprised in the same state of negligence and made an example to the rest of the world, this double reflection, both upon the distress of his friend and the goodness of that God who had preserved him from it, would in all likelihood soften his heart into holy tempers and make him turn the remainder of his life into a regular course of piety. This, therefore, being so useful a meditation, I shall here leave the reader, as I hope, seriously engaged in it. Chapter 4. We can please God in no state or employment of life, but by intending and devoting it all to His honor and glory. Having in the first chapter stated the general nature of devotion and shown that it implies not any form of prayer, but a certain form of life that is offered to God, not at any particular times or places, but everywhere and in everything, I shall now descend to some particulars and show how we are to devote our labor and employment, our times and fortunes unto God. As a good Christian should consider every place as holy, because God is there, so he should look upon every part of his life as a matter of holiness, because it is to be offered unto God. The profession of a clergyman is an holy profession, because it is a ministration in holy things and attendance at the altar. But worldly business is to be made holy unto the Lord by being done as a service to him and in conformity to his divine will. For as all men and all things in the world as truly belong unto God, as any places, things, or persons that are devoted to divine service, so all things are to be used, and all persons are to act in their several states and employments for the glory of God. Men of worldly business, therefore, must not look upon themselves as at liberty to live to themselves, to sacrifice to their own humors and tempers, because their employment is of a worldly nature. But they must consider that, as the world and all worldly professions as truly belong to God, as persons and things that are devoted to the altar, so it is as much the duty of men in worldly business to live wholly unto God, as it is the duty of those who are devoted to divine service. As the whole world is God's, so the whole world is to act for God. As all men have the same relation to God, as all men have all their powers and faculties from God, so all men are obliged to act for God with all their powers and faculties. As all things are God's, so all things are to be used and regarded as the things of God. For men to abuse things on earth and live to themselves is the same rebellion against God as for angels to abuse things in heaven, because God is just the same Lord of all on earth as he is the Lord of all in heaven. Things may and must differ in their use, but yet they are all to be used according to the will of God. Men may and must differ in their employments, but yet they must all act for the same ends, as dutiful servants of God, in the right and pious performance of their several callings. Clergymen must live wholly unto God in one particular way, that is, in the exercise of holy offices, in the ministration of prayers and sacraments, and a zealous distribution of spiritual goods. But men of other employments are, in their particular ways, as much obliged to act as the servants of God, and live wholly unto him in their several callings. This is the only difference between clergymen and people of other callings. When it can be shown that men might be vain, covetous, sensual, worldly-minded, or proud in the exercise of their worldly business, then it will be allowable for clergymen to indulge the same tempers in their sacred profession. For though these tempers are most odious and most criminal in clergymen, who besides their baptismal vow have a second time devoted themselves to God to be his servants, not in the common offices of human life, but in the spiritual service of the most holy sacred things, and who are therefore to keep themselves as separate and different from the common life of other men, as a church or an altar is to be kept separate from houses and tables of common use. Yet as all Christians are by their baptism devoted to God and made professors of holiness, so are they all in their several callings to live as holy and heavenly persons, doing everything in their common life only in such a manner as it may be received by God as a service done to him. For things spiritual and temporal, sacred and common,